Hello, welcome to the Rethink Your Understanding podcast, where we dive deep into transformative insights on leadership, agile, lean, DevOps, value stream management, and flow engineering. I'm your human host, Phil Clark. I've been leading technology teams for over two decades in both eras of software delivery. In each episode, the AI-generated hosts dive into key concepts and insights from my articles and blog posts. While this conversation is generated by AI, there may be occasional errors or misinterpretations that differ slightly from the original material. Join me as we explore and improve our understanding of digital transformation. I hope this inspires you to read the original article and reach out to me to collaborate. You will find a link to the article in the show notes. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please like, rate, and follow us on your podcast provider of choice. Your support helps us reach more listeners, and every review counts. Stay tuned for more thought-provoking content, and thanks for being part of our podcast experiment and journey. In this episode, the AI hosts explore why teams, unlike individuals, rarely get a performance review, and why that needs to change. Based on my latest article, you'll hear a practical framework designed for Agile and DevOps teams to reflect on how they work, not just what they deliver. We'll walk through team health dimensions from collaboration to delivery integrity, and how your team can use them as a conversation starter, not scorecards. If you're ready to look beyond metrics like DORA, flow, and developer experience to ask deeper questions about team behavior, this one's for you. Let's dive in.
Have you ever noticed how much energy organizations pour into individual performance reviews? Like really dissecting one person's achievements?
Oh, absolutely. Meticulous detail.
Right. But then, often, how the entire team is actually performing together. It kind of gets glossed over.
It's a real disconnect, isn't it? Especially when you think about how much value today really comes from teams working collectively.
Exactly. Innovation, complex problem solving, it's usually a group effort. Mm. So our mission in this deep dive is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Get you up to speed quickly on effective team assessment.
And pull out the most important, maybe even surprising, insights.
We're drawing heavily today from a really insightful article. It's called A Self-Guided Performance Assessment for Agile Delivery Teams. It's by Phil Clark. We'll just call him Phil.
From his website, rethinkyourunderstanding.com. Great stuff on there.
Yeah, definitely worth checking out. Now, we'll stick closely to Phil's ideas because they're so well-researched, but, you know, like any good chat, we might wander a bit off the exact text.
Sure, to explore the really juicy bits.
All right, and we really do encourage you, go visit rethinkyourunderstanding.com, read the full article. There's way more depth and practical examples there than we can possibly cover.
Absolutely. And Phil, he really zeroes in on this core problem.
Yeah.
We're pretty good, or we think we are, at managing individuals, goals, reviews, the whole package.
Mm-hmm.
But the team's collective performance, we often just hope it works out. Or maybe look at some output metrics and call it a day.
Right, like just the results, not the process.
Exactly. But in modern software delivery, let's be honest, the team is the engine. Phil makes this powerful point that the collective intelligence, how a group thinks and works together.
That's more important than just adding up individual skills.
Way more impactful, ultimately, which is why getting team effectiveness right isn't just like a nice bonus. It's strategically vital for any organization that wants to actually thrive.
Okay, so let's unpack that. Why is focusing on team effectiveness so critically important? What does Phil highlight as the sort of concrete benefits?
Well, he lays out three key benefits, and they really paint a full picture. First up is execution.
Cool.
High-performing teams. They don't just look busy. They're truly effective. They work faster. They tend to meet customer needs better with better solutions.
And they can adapt.
Huge adaptability. They adjust quickly when things change, focus on the right priorities, and maybe crucially, they recover much faster when problems pop up.
Like resilience.
Exactly. A bug gets out. They swarm it, they learn, they fix it, no finger pointing, no letting it fester. It's about flow and resilience.
Makes sense. What's the second one?
Second is engagement and retention. Now, this might sound a bit softer, but it's absolutely fundamental.
People sticking around.
Right. People want to stay, they thrive in places where their work matters, where they feel supported, and critically, where it feels psychologically safe.
Safe to speak up admit mistakes.
Yeah, share ideas, challenge things without fear. Strong teams naturally build that kind of environment. And when people feel valued and connected like that, burnout drops.
And you keep your best people.
You got it. It becomes a talent magnet, not this constant revolving door.
Okay, execution, engagement, and retention. What's the third?
And the third is sustainable performance. We've all seen that hero developer, right? Working crazy hours.
Yeah, the 80-hour week warrior.
That's just not sustainable. Burnout often happens when individuals carry way too much alone. But strong teams, they share the load, they actively support each other.
Collaborate on the tough stuff.
Exactly. That collective responsibility prevents individual burnout and fosters consistent output over the long haul. It turns work from this series of exhausting sprints into more of a well-paced marathon, everyone helping each other finish strong.
Execution, engagement, sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
Those three really drive home why this team focus is crucial. It changes the whole conversation.
It really does.
And this brings us to what Phil calls the better question. Instead of just the usual individual review focus, he says we should ask, how well does your team work together?
Sounds simple, but it's powerful.
Yeah, and then he unpacks it with these really smart sub-questions like, what strengths is the team collectively using? What areas need development as a team?
How often do they even talk about their performance together?
Right, and is there a system for feedback and improvement for the team itself? It's a total reframe from the individual lens.
Exactly, and what's really interesting here is, you know, lots of organizations are tracking metrics, valuable ones like DORA metrics.
Deployment frequency, lead time, that sort of thing.
Yeah, DevOps research and assessment stuff. Or flow metrics, looking at how value moves through the system. Or even DX Core 4, space, developer experience metrics.
How engineers feel about their tools and environment.
Right, all good stuff. But Phil's point is, these often don't fully capture how the team is actually working together day to day. They tell you the what, or maybe the how people feel, but not always the underlying team dynamics, those invisible threads.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting then. If teams are using DORA or flow metrics, what specific questions do those metrics not always answer? What's the gap Phil's framework aims to fill?
That's the key insight. Phil points out this gap that metrics often miss. Like, are we really doing what we said mattered? Are we sticking to our observability practices, keeping test coverage up, or just ticking boxes?
The walk versus the talk.
Precisely. And are we genuinely working as a team cohesively? Or are we more like individuals just doing tasks side by side in parallel, maybe leading to bottlenecks and awkward handoffs?
Yeah, I could see that.
And this one's powerful. Do we hold each other accountable, really? For delivering with integrity? Or do we let standards slip when the pressure's on?
Like skipping code reviews or testing.
Exactly. Or are we collaborating across roles or stuck in silos? Mm. And here's one many developers will recognize. Are we shipping through red builds?
Yeah.
You know, pushing out unstable code and just hoping for the best.
Oof, yeah. That's a symptom of something deeper.
Totally. So Phil's core idea, and it really resonates, is, look, if we hold individuals accountable for how they show up and perform, shouldn't we do the same for teams, since they're the main unit creating value?
Makes logical sense.
But he's very clear this framework isn't meant as like a manager's grading tool or some leadership scorecard for judgment. He calls it a reflection more than a framework.
A mirror, not a report card. I like that.
Exactly. It's a guide for the team itself to improve, to gain self-awareness. Not for someone else to grade them.
That framing immediately makes it feel safer, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
More constructive. So how does he suggest starting this reflection?
He suggests starting super simple, but it's really powerful. Just a basic check-in.
Yeah.
As a team, would we consider ourselves underperforming, performing, or high-performing?
And the key is, it's the team's decision. No outside judge.
Absolutely no external judgment. It's purely about the team cultivating that collective self-awareness together.
Okay, so the team lands on one of those labels. What's next? How do they dig deeper?
Then come these fantastic follow-up questions Phil recommends first. What makes us feel that way? And this isn't just vague feelings.
You need specifics.
Yeah, specific behaviors, habits, concrete examples, things they've actually observed or experienced that back up their assessment. It grounds the whole conversation.
Okay, what else?
Then what should we keep doing? Focus on the positives. What's working well? What strengths or habits are successful that they want to protect or even amplify?
Build on success, not just fix problems. Nice.
Exactly. Then, maybe the tougher one, what should we stop doing? What's causing friction? Waste? misalignment? What's holding them back? This needs honesty.
Yeah, potentially difficult conversations there.
For sure. And then constructively, what should we start doing? What's missing? What new practice or behavior could really move the needle? And finally, a crucial check. Do we have the skills and knowledge needed?
Checking on capability makes sense.
And this whole facilitated discussion, you know, rooted in their shared reality, it often brings out so much more actionable insight than just looking at metrics ever could.
It sets a different tone, right? Constructive, team-owned.
Totally. Empowers the team to own their improvement journey.
So once they've done that initial reflection, Phil introduces his 10-dimension agile team performance assessment framework. How does this fit in?
Right. These dimensions are basically tools for a more detailed self-assessment, maybe for retrospectives or quarterly check-ins. Think of them as a compass, like he says.
A compass to navigate towards better outcomes, not rigid rules.
Exactly. Not a judgment. And these 10 dimensions, they cover critical areas, how the team executes, collaborates, their engineering practices, even customer interaction.
All 10. That sounds like a lot.
It can be, but the beauty is its flexibility. Teams don't have to use all 10 at once. They can pick and choose. Which ones are most relevant right now? What are their biggest challenges or focus areas? It's totally adaptable.
Okay, let's make this concrete. Can we dive into a couple of these dimensions? What stands out to you as particularly illustrative for teams listening?
Absolutely. Let's take execution and ownership. The core reflection prompt is something like, do we plan realistically, adapt when needed, and take shared responsibility for outcomes?
Okay. Seems fundamental.
It is. And signs of struggle here. Maybe the team always misses deadlines or their goals are just wildly optimistic. You might see lots of reactive firefighting instead of proactive work.
Unclear priorities. No.
Yeah. Or maybe a tendency to blame others' leadership, other teams, whatever, instead of looking at their own processes. That's a big red flag.
So how does Phil break down performance levels here? Like meeting versus not meeting expectations?
Good question. So not meeting expectations might look like no real planning rhythm, commitments frequently missed, blockers hidden until it's a crisis, just chaos.
Okay. And meeting
expectations. They plan regularly. They hit most commitments. They revise estimates transparently when things change. They raise blockers early. They're functional, reliable.
And exceeding. What does that look like?
Exceeding expectations goes further. They adapt plans with real agility. They actively manage realistic estimates. They truly collectively own their outcomes. They're proactive about risks, getting ahead of problems. They're really driving.
Got it. What's another good example to mention?
How about collaboration and communication? Super critical. The prompt is basically, do we collaborate openly, communicate effectively, and stay aligned across different roles?
Signs of struggle seem obvious here. Silos.
Definitely. Silos within the team or between the team and others, missed handoffs, unclear ownership, frequent miscommunication causing rework. You see it all the time.
So not meeting expectations might be working in isolation. Poor communication.
Yeah, inconsistent or unclear communication, knowledge not being shared, maybe even people not showing up or engaging in key meetings. They're disconnected.
And meeting expectations.
Meeting means they collaborate effectively within the team. Communication is open across roles inside the team bubble. They function well internally.
But exceeding is more outward looking.
Exactly. Exceeding means they create shared clarity for everyone involved. Collaboration is almost instinctive, and they actively drive alignment, not just internally, but across all the relevant functions in the wider org. They become this hub of clarity.
That's a significant difference. One more, maybe something technical.
Sure, let's do code quality and engineering practices. The prompt is, do we apply consistent technical practices that support high quality, sustainable code?
Signs of struggle here must be painful. Bugs.
Yeah.
Tech debt.
Oh, yeah. Frequent bugs, lots of manual processes for things that should be automated, high rework, and that ever-growing mountain of technical debt. Not meeting expectations looks like frequent defects, maybe automation, testing, refactoring, or just lacking, constant firefighting.
Okay, meeting expectations.
Meeting would be, you know, defects are less frequent, code reviews and testing are standard practice, quality practices are generally applied. They're keeping things reasonably tidy.
And exceeding the gold standard.
Exceeding is where quality becomes a true shared team value. Clean code, solid automation, sustainable practices, they're just embedded in how the team works every day. It's proactive prevention, not just reaction.
It's really clear how these dimensions provide that compass, like you said, helping teams pinpoint specific areas beyond just Did we ship on time?
Exactly. It gets to the how and the underlying health.
So Phil gives this framework. How does he advise teams actually use it effectively? What's the practical advice?
Right, the how-to. First, and this is crucial, run it as a team. This isn't a top-down exercise.
The team leads the conversation.
Yes. During retrospectives, maybe quarterly check-ins, after a big delivery, whatever fits. The team members themselves drive it. They know the reality best. The goal isn't grading or blaming. It's pausing, aligning, asking, how are we doing and how can we get better?
Makes sense. What else?
Second, make it yours. It's not rigid. Teams should feel free to use only the dimensions that matter most now. Rename them if it helps. Redefine what exceeding looks like for their context.
Adapt it.
Totally. The more it fits their reality, language, and values, the more powerful the reflection. It's a template, not gospel.
Good point. And what about those other metrics, like DORAR?
Yes. Third point. Use metrics to support the story, not replace it. Data like DORAR, flow metrics, absolutely valuable. They add quantitative perspective.
But they don't tell the whole story.
Exactly. They should inform the qualitative chat, not shut it down. Numbers show the what, but often miss the why or the how it feels. Data should spark curiosity and enrich the dialogue about team dynamics.
That's a really important balance. So this raises a question. How can teams maybe get even more value out of this, perhaps beyond just their internal talks? Any ways to broaden the perspective?
Yeah, good question. Inviting broader perspectives can be really powerful. Some teams get huge value from, say, anonymous 360-degree feedback.
Or stakeholders, other teams they work with.
Exactly. It can uncover blind spots or validate internal feelings in a really useful way. Another option is bringing in an experienced agile coach or delivery lead.
But not to evaluate them.
Right. No, absolutely not for evaluation. Their role is to support growth, help the team spot patterns over time, connect the dots between metrics and behaviors, guide the reflection deeper. They're expert facilitators.
Asking the right questions, helping process insights.
Exactly. And helping turn those insights into actual concrete action plans. And Phil really hammers home this concluding philosophy, which I think is key. This is about ownership, not oversight.
Ownership by the team.
Yes. While you could misuse this as a performance management hammer, he strongly urges using it as an internal check-in resource for the team. It's designed to build trust within the team.
Encourage those honest conversations.
Right. And get that shared snapshot of where they are. Used right by the team. For the team, it boosts cohesion, capability, and that culture of continuous improvement.
So for leaders, it's more about spotting themes across teams.
Yeah.
To inform coaching.
Exactly. See patterns, support better, don't micromanage or use it to judge. The real power unlocks when the team owns its improvement journey.
So wrapping this up, what does this all really mean for you, the listener, and your team? I mean, it seems clear high-performing teams aren't just luck.
Definitely not luck. And they aren't static either. It's continuous, intentional effort.
They succeed because they keep looking at both what they deliver and, crucially, how they deliver it together.
And this framework Phil provides, it's just a really practical, adaptable starting point for any team wanting to do that, to move beyond just hoping things get better.
So maybe a final thought to leave people with.
Yeah, a provocative thought, perhaps. Think about your own team right now, based on some of these dimensions we talked about. Execution, collaboration, quality. What's maybe one small change?
Just one.
One small thing you could start doing or maybe stop doing that might actually have a significant ripple effect on how you all work together effectively. Often it's those small shifts owned by everyone that make the biggest difference.
That's a great challenge, a small actionable step. And just a final reminder, this deep dive was sparked by Phil Clark's fantastic article, A Self-Guided Performance Assessment for Agile Delivery Teams.
On RethinkYourUnderstanding.com.
Yes. Please do go read the full piece. So many more examples and details there. And Phil has other related articles on his site, too, digging into things like feature factories versus purpose, decoding metrics. Lots to explore.
Definitely worth a click.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into really understanding team performance. Keep learning, keep exploring, and keep improving.